Before we dive in, just a quick favor. If you're enjoying what we're doing at Angels Among Us, please take a second to rate and review the show. And if something in today's episode touches your heart, please share it with a friend.
Welcome to Short Story Wednesday on Angels Among Us. Each week, we bring you a short but powerful story to lift your spirits and remind you that God is in even the smallest details of your life. If you have a story you'd like to share, we'd be honored to hear it.
Today's Short Story Wednesday is another rewind and the third and final chapter of our story, the one that inspired this whole podcast. Looking back on all the miracles that brought our family together still blows us away. It's so special to remember where this all began and see how far we've come since then. Thank you for being here and for being part of this journey with us. We hope you enjoy the final chapter of our story. Hello, hello. Welcome to Angels Among Us, episode number 3. We are really excited about this episode. If you have enjoyed the first 2 episodes, I think you're in for a treat on this one. This is the grand finale of our story, of our family. It's kind of, God really shows off at the end here. And I really feel like this is like his grand finale of the whole thing.
Gosh, I'm already starting to get choked up just thinking about it.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. Lots and lots of miracles in this one. And it's pretty awesome.
I think, really quick, I think that once you listen to this, like, if you did not believe that there was a Heavenly Father, like, I don't know what to tell you. Because this last episode, we definitely saw a lot of angels through this time.
Yeah, and it's just everything kind of comes together. And I think throughout this part, we were able to see a lot of the why, right? God just saying, this is why, this is why. You know, thank you for trusting me, even though maybe we didn't always, you know, some of that trust was lacking a little bit, I think. I'm going to start off this episode with a truth really quick. Michaela is way more beautiful than I am.
Oh my gosh, stop it,
Prince. Seriously, I turned 40 in January, and I, looking on camera right here, I'm able to see, like, everything.
I don't think people really care. Okay.
Okay.
You're very good working. So.
All right. Okay. Throughout this, listen, I'm really sorry, but this episode might be a little bit longer just because we want to try to get all of the last little bit into this. We've kind of had to skip over. I mean, there's so many other things that we could have talked about in Reese's story, and we will still touch on a lot of that just because it all ties in. Reese's story, even in our infertility journey, I mean, there's been so many angels in our story, in our lives, that, you know, we just can't talk about all of them. And hopefully throughout this whole thing with us interviewing other people, the plan is to still be able to tie in our life experiences with that also, as we learn from those other individuals as well. So here we go. Buckle up. So we had been fostering Reese. Like we said, there's a lot of roller coasters, ups and downs, super hard days, some really good days. One thing about fostering that maybe some of you might not know is the social workers from time to time can literally show up and do a check-in without any kind of notice. They just knock on the door, you have to answer, and they get let in. And it's, if you know Michaela at all. Those days were super stressful just because she just felt like she was going to be getting judged as a mom, right, from these social workers. And she's a phenomenal mother, and just like any really good mom, I think they're their own worst critics, and they get some mom guilt. And have you ever dealt with that?
Every day. No, I think that it made it really, it was brought on, like that stress was brought on in the very beginning, because one of the very first surprise checkups was like the first time that I like got dinged, basically. So they surprised me with a surprise visit, and I felt very judged because they came into Reese's bedroom. And of course, like, I want to make sure that the house is clean, like, before they come. And that's just natural, right? Like, I don't know. Especially in the beginning, we didn't know the rules. We didn't know, you know, what really mattered and what didn't, right? And so I always wanted to make sure that the house was clean, that they felt like we were best suited for this little girl. And I think it's just natural to feel that way. And so the very first surprise visit, they come in, they go into Reese's room, and she says, "Why do you have a teddy bear in her crib?" And like very stern. And I just like wanted to break down because I just felt like, what do you mean? Like, this is just a teddy bear that actually I usually never even put into her crib. But it was on the floor. I put it in the crib, not even thinking, but apparently, obviously, that's a choking hazard. And so, like, they wrote down notes on their tracker or in their notes. And, like, that was a part of, like, the checkup. Like, it was in the notes. And so I just kind of felt like, man, like, I literally can't be a parent. Like, they treat you like, you know, I hate to say it, but sometimes garbage. Like, you just feel like you're worthless. Like, man, like, I'm getting judged because I have a teddy bear in her crib. Like, this is insane. So that's what started it. That's why I had these awful feelings when they did those surprise visits. Not because I was hiding anything. It was just, I never knew what to expect.
Well, little did they know we put her to bed with like 20 stuffed animals. So.
Right.
Just kidding. We took everything out. All right. So fast forward. Okay. We dealt with this kind of stuff for a long time. It finally got changed to an adoption case. We knew things were kind of going in that direction. That was about a year and a half in. And it just seemed like the state was on pause all the time. We wanted to be in fast forward mode, and they were just in pause or slow motion.
Well, let me hold on really quick. I just want to make this really quick. Some of the reason why it took also a really long time is because, not that this really matters, but we got the in adoption. You have to get the approval of both biological parents. And so we finally got to a place where we were thinking that the biological mom, you know, was okay with it. And so was the dad. And so the biological mom ended up signing the paperwork. But she signed the paperwork her signature was in the dateline. And it got sent to Olympia, where they have to approve it. And that takes about a month for them to like get it and then approve it. When they got the paperwork back, they sent it back with a big fat void on it. And so then,
because she signed the date.
She signed her signature in the date line instead of the signature line. So ridiculous. And so,
well, you think somebody would have caught that.
They should have. And you think that that's bad. Well, then it happened again. So they finally had to find the mom again, or the biological mom again, and find the father again. Because, you know, they do struggle with addiction. And so you never could find them.
Different cell phone number every other week.
So they finally found them again. And this time the dad printed his name instead of like signed his name. It gets sent up to Olympia again. And again, another like 1.5 months later, it gets sent back with a big fat void on it. And so that's so infuriating to us because that should have been caught before it even got sent. And so those types of things would happen all the time. And it just sits on their the social worker's desk because they have so many cases that they have to, you know, handle. And so when I said in the last episode that you do kind of have to be a squeaky wheel, when those things happen, you kind of have to advocate for yourself, and because no one is doing checkups and checking on you. So anyways, I just wanted to add that little piece because it can be really frustrating sometimes because it seems like no one's caring, you know, about this child.
Yeah. A lot of times it seemed like we were literally the only ones that cared for her.
Yeah.
And our family, of course,
yeah. Oh,
our
yeah,
extended family. Okay. So all of that, fast forward, let's just get right into Teague. Yeah.
Our sweet little tornado Teague.
He's the best.
He really is the best. He's just a little crazy.
Okay. Follow along. This is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Everything that comes into play here. Let's see if you can count the miracles in this portion of it. Right before Reese turned two, it was kind of when the housing market was starting to increase with interest rates and stuff going up, and we were living in a house. We loved our house, right? It was perfect for us. With Michaela's business and stuff, it was kind of starting to get a little small just because she needed a bunch of storage space for all of her Pampered Chef product. By the way, if you need any Pampered Chef stuff, get a hold of her. So we had talked about eventually needing a bigger house, but we were just happy and we were in a good place. We had a really, really good interest rate. Our mortgage was super manageable. But I was at work one day and I got a distinct impression that we needed to sell the house. And I went home and talked to Michaela about it, reached out to a realtor who I had known that when we wanted to sell and buy that she was going to be the person that we reached out to. Reached out to her on a Wednesday, started looking at houses that next weekend. This was well before we even were ready to put our house on the market, or so we thought. We walked into this house on a Sunday, and immediately Michaela was like, "This is my house." And I was like,
"The house that we're in right now, just to clarify."
I was like, "No, it's not." No, it's not. And we had Reese with us and we were walking around and stuff. And I was like, "Wow, this is a beautiful home." But I wasn't really paying attention because, one, we weren't ready to sell our house, or so I thought. And two, it was like at the very top of what we were wanting to pay for a house. And houses were going pretty well over asking price. And we just couldn't offer much over asking price at all. And so anyway, make a long story short, our realtor was able to work some magic. We were able to get an offer in, our house put on the market the following day. It was a contingent offer. We knew that there were a few other offers. Still wasn't thinking we were going to get it. Our realtor calls us and told us we got it. And we couldn't believe it. And it, in my mind, in our mind, I think we knew that for some reason, Heavenly Father needed us in this home. And we didn't know why. For a while, we thought it was because we were really cool and this neighborhood needed us, right? Oh, I'm totally kidding.
Oh gosh.
Kind of. But
there's a point.
We knew that we needed to be here and we didn't know why. Reese had just turned 2 shortly before we moved in. And at that time, we were trying to think and we're trying to brainstorm and how are we going to get Reese a sibling? She needs to be a big sister. And IVF was an option again. In fact, we're about ready to pull the trigger on IVF again. And the deeper you go into IVF, there's a lot of things. There's so much legal paperwork and stuff. And we were just reading over some of it. And
there's like 100 questions that you have to fill out at the place that we went to. And
we were going to go in Spokane at this time. Michaela was a little uneasy with some of these questions, but we were still going to do it. You know, we needed another baby. And for about a week straight, I was just so uneasy about it. And I felt like it was not our path, IVF. And it was really hard. And I went to Michaela and I had to tell her that I didn't think that IVF is what we were supposed to do. And coming from me, right, the reason that it was so hard, because I, in that moment, I kind of felt like I was taking away our only chance to have another baby. But I just, for multiple reasons, I just knew that we couldn't go through with it. And thankfully, my wife is very supportive and we're on the same team all the time. And it was hard, but she made it seem like it was almost a little bit of a weight off of her shoulders as well. I don't want to speak for you and say exactly how you felt, but
no, I think that I had my concerns, but you know, when you've gone through infertility for so many years, like there's so many different factors that go through your head. And I did, when Brent came to me, I was shocked. And I think that because our marriage is rock solid, we do agree on almost everything. I really trusted him. I trusted, Brent is not someone who just says things to say things. He really does think about things deeply. And so I did trust that, you know, he had these promptings for a reason. I think that I probably cried a little bit silently because I felt like that was the only way that we would be able to have our kids. And yeah. But I didn't doubt him for one second.
Me or Heavenly Father?
Well, definitely Heavenly Father. Now knowing the flip side of it, for sure.
So a few months go by and Reese was 2.5. It was, you know, summer turning into fall. We're getting into Christmas and still it's kind of eating at us, even though we weren't necessarily talking about it all the time. I know it's something that I thought about quite a bit. And I know there's not a day that went by that Michaela didn't think about her babies. But it was just one of those things. We just didn't know what to do or where to go. And right around Reese's 3rd birthday is when Michaela, for the first time, told me, she said, I just feel like there's a boy. Sorry. I feel like there's a baby. I don't know how, or she just started getting those feelings and those promptings. And I think for both of us, a part of that was hoping and thinking that we were going to miraculously get pregnant. Right. But those feelings just didn't really go away. She didn't talk about it every day, but it was more than once that she brought it up over the next 4 or 5 months. And Reese's birthday's in March. And shortly after that, Michaela's nephew had started baseball, and he had been playing, had a tournament in Tri-Cities. And this particular game was actually on Mother's Day. And listen, Mother's Day, for anybody that struggles with infertility, is, it's one of the worst days of the year until we got Reese, right? Then it was much better. We were able to celebrate Mother's Day, and but still, it was still hard those days when you feel like still there's something missing, right? Or even any mother that has had any kind of miscarriage, or any parents that have dealt with any kind of loss. I mean, it's funny how there's days out there that can be so amazing for some people, but so tragic and difficult for other people.
Well, and Father's Day too. I mean, don't don't discredit yourself.
Yeah. But so Mother's Day this particular year is 2023.
Yeah.
Right. We're at Ty's game watching some baseball. And if you know anything about Michaela, that's one of her top five favorite things to do is watch baseball. And it doesn't matter if she even knows anybody playing. It's
it brings joy. It's how we met, and I just love being outside and watching the game. It's the greatest game, and I love it. But yep. I'm going to take this one really quick.
Yeah, so of course.
I was about to go to a Pampered Chef conference, and I had told myself that, you know, at that point, after Brent had told me that, you know, he just had these strong feelings that IVF was not in our sight, or he felt like it wasn't our journey. I just really, I don't know if I became really like numb, or I just felt like, okay, if IVF is not the path that we're going to take, then I have to give it my all in eating healthier, taking better care of myself, trying to get, you know, stress off of me, because I had talked to friends prior on how they got pregnant after, you know, waiting so long. And one of my dear friends, Emily Kerrigan, she told me that she went on a whole 30 diet, but it was for 90 days instead of 30 days. And she got pregnant, and she really started to take care of her gut health. And you guys, I had tried every single thing. I mean, you think about going through 14 years of infertility and how many people have tried to give us advice. You know, I mean, I'm getting a little personal here, but you know, no, I can't say it.
This is a kid show.
Okay, whatever. Fine. I won't say it. But like, I mean, it's not that crazy, but you know, you can imagine the things that we have heard over the course of 14 years. And I've been poked, I've been prodded, I've taken every supplement, every diet, every fad that you can possibly think of. And, but the one thing that I hadn't done is been really consistent with my diet for that long. And so I said,
like, just to reset your whole body. That was
done the whole 30 before. I'd done keto, all of the things that the doctor had recommended, but nothing for that long. And if you know me, I'm a foodie. I love eating, and I love eating all types of foods. And so it's really hard for me to be on like diets and stuff. But I was committed. I said, okay, I'm going to try this for 90 days and I'm going to give it everything that I have and take it very seriously. And if I do not get pregnant at the end of this 90 days, then I'm done. I'm done being poked and prodded. I'm done going to doctors. I'm just done. My body is exhausted from trying different things. It's my periods were never, you know, normal because of how many things I was trying, and it's just exhausting. And I finally took it seriously, and I was about to fly to Chicago. This was like 2 months before, no, I was leaving that next week after Ty's baseball game. And I was about to start the whole 90. And I was really stressed because I was like, okay, I'm flying, I'm going to be in conferences, and I'm here trying to start this whole 90. Like, holy cow, how am I?
The way that Michaela talks about food and how much she loves, you'd think she's like 400 pounds. But, and sorry, we shouldn't really talk about that because there are people that really struggle with that, but yeah, it is, you do love,
I just
foods, and
don't like to be limited to what I can eat, and it has been a battle of mine. It's a struggle for sure. I'm fortunate to be as small as I am, but I do struggle with the, you know, being strict with food. So I was really stressed on what I was going to be eating. And if you have ever traveled, like for business, it's hard sometimes. And you're especially going to Chicago, like the pizza is so good. And we do a lot of like, you know, dinners and stuff with the team. And so anyways, I'm really stressed. And I am at this baseball game, and I'll let you tell them how I was acting.
I look down at Michaela, and she's taking a picture of this player on Ty's team. His name was Tegan. And that's been a name that we have had since we were dating, that we wanted our little boy, our first boy. And it's Mother's Day, and I can tell that she's a little bit, I mean, you know, husbands and wife, when something's off, you can tell, especially when you love somebody as much as I love Michaela. But I look down, and she's taking a picture of this player, and I'm like, babe, what are you doing? That's not Ty. And she's like, I know. So tell him.
I start crying, and Brent's like, what the heck is wrong with you? Like, what is going on? Are you okay? And I said, I'm taking this picture because this kid's name is Tegan, and I just am so worried that, and so sad at the thought that I might never be able to cheer for my son. Like, all I ever wanted was to have a son that Brent could coach and teach and, you know, the love of baseball, and like just the thought of like not being able to have that, like it just really weighed on me at that game, just hearing his mom say go Teague, you know. I just wanted that so badly for myself, and so I took a picture because, and I put it on my screensaver, and it was because I wanted to be able to look at that picture every single day through this whole 90 and be able to, you know, have that be my inspiration, knowing that I really felt in my heart of hearts that we were going to have a son. I just felt it. And so I had to do whatever I had to do to get the motivation to continue down this path for 90 days. And if you don't know what the Whole 30 is, you guys, it's no sugar, no dairy. Like, you're basically just eating meat and veggies. Like, it's hard.
It's the whole foods, all whole foods.
Yeah. And for 90 days. And So that was my inspiration. And so, yeah, then go ahead.
So she's going on with this, doing really well, being really strict. She goes to Chicago, comes back, and is still just being a champ. And I think she gets about halfway into it. And again, she just had a moment where she said, "Babe, there's a boy for us." And every time, as a husband, when you hear something like that, there's no doubt in my mind that those feelings and promptings were right for her, that Heavenly Father was communicating to her, giving her comfort. But as a husband, I'm just trying to rack my brain, like, how, you know? And me wanting to, I mean, I want to try to fix everything. And when that kind of stuff would happen forever, it was just weighing on me. Did we make the right decision with IVF? You know, it's those moments were really hard. And so we just keep chugging along. We're in July at this point, and my brother-in-law's grandmother passed away, and super close with my brother-in-law, Jesse. And so my mom and I and Reese drove over to go to the funeral, and Michaela was again in Chicago at this time for another conference. It was this day, I think it was probably like July 19th or probably July 17th, yeah, something like that. And we're driving back from the west side of the state, and my mom brings it up. I know these kinds of conversations are always difficult, but she said, basically in a roundabout way, "What are you guys doing to get Reese a sibling?" And, you know, because 6 months earlier, we had sat down with the whole family and told them that we're no longer pursuing IVF. And in that moment, we had told them that we were just going to be expecting and praying for a miracle. And I told my mom that day, I said, "Mom, I know that this is not what you want to hear, but we just feel like God has something for us. That in a way, we're just not supposed to do anything right now." And I know she had a hard time with that, because in life, we need to be proactive, right? And we need to take initiative and do things. And I know that Heavenly Father wants us to do that as well. He wants to see us working for the things that we want and need. And, but in that moment, we had just felt like we just needed to be still. And we were going to be going on vacation that next week. We were going to be going to a cabin in Idaho that we own. I'm just kidding. We don't own a cabin. Maybe one day. But we were going to be going with some friends for the week. Michaela was flying back from Chicago that Saturday, late Saturday, and we were going to leave super early Sunday morning. And it was a Friday. Well, Thursday night, late Thursday night. You want to tell them about the text that you got?
Yeah. So,
but you didn't get it until Friday morning because you were a couple hours ahead.
So I want to back up a little bit. We moved into this house, and I had met our neighbors once through passing. I was walking Reese in her stroller and two doors down from us. And our neighbor was out. Her name's Kim. And she kind of, we stopped and we were chatting, and I had just briefly mentioned us adopting Reese. And so then fast forward.
And her husband coaches baseball. And I was a baseball coach for a while. So he kind of knew of me. We knew of each other a little bit, but we had really only, I hadn't even met them at that point officially, I don't think.
Yeah, no, you hadn't.
I mean, as neighbors anyway.
He just knew that you were the head coach for the college.
Yeah, because everybody knows me.
Oh, my God. Sorry.
I have to let my personality come out a little bit.
You're actually really funny. I probably shouldn't say that to you. Boost your head a little bit more. Anyway, so I had met them one time, talked to, you know, Kim in passing. She had bought like some product from me, like through that conversation and stuff. So she had my phone number. And so I'm in Chicago, and mind you, it's 2 hours ahead in Chicago from where we're at. We're Pacific Standard Time, Chicago Central Standard Time. And so Kim had texted me that night, and it was about like 11:30 back here, the time that was here, Pacific Standard Time in Washington. And so it was like 1 o'clock in the morning in Chicago. So I was already asleep. And she had texted me and said, "Hey, Nikhila, I just wanted to let you know, I was just passing by and your garage door is opened." And so I get it the next morning, and I texted Brent because...
You called me and you started yelling at me.
Oh, please. Oh, my gosh. Don't listen to me. So I texted Brent because that's not something Brent would do. Like, if you know Brent, he's very routine. Like, he knows...
I checked the garage because the man door for the garage is really close to our room. So I always go in there and check every night before I go to bed because... Michaela usually leaves the garage door open.
Oh,
so.
My gosh. I did not catch whatever. So anyway, so I texted him and I, you know, told him what Kim had said. And he's like, "Babe, I know 100% that I closed the garage last night." And I was like, okay, didn't think anything.
Because I went to bed at like 10:30, right?
Yeah.
And I checked it. It was 100% closed.
Yeah. So... don't think anything of it. And I, this had been like 10 hours later, after I got the text, I'm going into a meeting and walking in, and I started to get this phone call, and I was in a group of some of my leaders, and my mom was there cause she's one of my leaders, in our business. And, I told them, I said, "Hey, I'm getting a call from my neighbor. I don't know why she's calling. Like, I need to answer this," because like normally I would have never answered it, but
believe me, she would never, she doesn't answer when she's at work events.
So she calls and I answered, and she said, "Nikhila, I know that this is crazy. But my attorney friend, just called and asked if we knew of anyone that was looking to adopt. And I just thought of you guys because I know that you adopted or are in the process of adopting your daughter. And so, you know, I don't want to step on your toes. If this isn't something that you're interested in, you know, just let me know." And I said, "Yeah, of course. You know, I mean, you can get him in contact with me. I'm just about to walk into a meeting, but if he wants to call, that's totally fine." And so we get off the phone. She calls the attorney, and literally I immediately call Brent, and he's about to go into a car wash, right? Or was
I was getting the oil changed because we were about to leave on a trip. I was going to go get the oil changed, and then I was going to go. I had a big shopping list of food to get. So I was prepping to go on this trip that we were leaving.
That
was Friday afternoon. We were going to be leaving early, early Sunday morning.
Yeah.
So I was prepping that. Michaela calls me and she says, "Babe, I just got a phone call from Kim, our neighbor. And she said that there's a baby. And I was like, what, you know, I didn't know. I was like, well, what, you know, I was trying to ask all these questions and she's like, I don't know anything. She didn't say anything. And then she's like, I got to go. I'm getting a phone call.
So I answer the call and the attorney says, hi, Michaela, this is Jeremy Bishop. And I heard that you and your husband might be interested in this baby. And I'm like, Jeremy Bishop. I'm like, Jeremy, you were our attorney that we appointed for our daughter like 2 years ago. We were in your office and we were actually just in your office like 2 months ago trying to finalize our adoption with Reese. And this is so crazy that it's you that's calling me. And he's like, Michaela, you will not believe this. This is the craziest thing. I actually was thinking about your family and I had my assistant pull all of my adoption files because I don't get these calls very often. And I also,
he said he's never gotten a call from the hospital.
Yeah. From like the hospital. Yeah, for sure. And he doesn't like really, that's not his practice. He's not, you know, in adoption very often. And he's like, but I had her pull all of my adoption files that I had because I was thinking about your family. But when we got to your family, your folder, you guys hadn't indicated that you wanted to adopt more. You hadn't checked that box. And so I just threw your file out. And that's when I started contacting all of my friends because, again, I don't get these calls. And so I called Kim and she had said that, you know, she might know of someone. And so he said, I don't have very much information. Let me call you right back because I was trying to like get as much information as possible.
But he wanted to call the social worker back and let him know that he had a family.
Yeah. And I had told him that we were going to be going out of town and we weren't going to have any cell phone service for like 7 days. And, cause we were going to be up in the mountains. And, I said, I don't know, like, should we go on this trip or should we wait? Like, what do you think? And he's like, well, let me contact the social worker and then I'll give you a call back because I have no information about, you know, ethnicity. I have no idea, like, if it's a boy or a girl, what the issues are. Because obviously the first thing in my mind is, you know, are they okay? Right. Like, not that we wouldn't want to take in, you know, a child that had drug issues, but it
and is. Are they cute? That's,
oh my gosh. That's right. Oh my gosh. So I get off the phone with Jeremy and then I call,
you called me. Yeah. You called me. You told me what you knew. Basically at that time we were kind of talking for 5 minutes. I was like, well, do I still go? Like, what, are we still going to go on this trip? And at this time I was still, walls are way up, right? Like, this doesn't happen. And I was just trying to process everything in my head. And here's Michaela. She's on the verge of tears already. Like, super excited. She's already talking like,
what if it's a boy? Like, what do you think? Like, I'm,
yeah, she's just all of those things.
I could tell that Brant was,
I was like, slow down.
Hold on, just, you know, we don't want to get our hopes up. And
plus, I really wanted to go in the mountains for a week.
You don't really, you know, could live over the mountains. Anyways, so I'm getting a call back from Jeremy and I'm like, okay, babe, it's him. Like, I'll call you right back. So he calls back and he says, I don't have a ton of information. All I know is that it's a little boy. And I like sunk to the ground. I dropped to my knees because I'm not joking you guys. Like, 2 months prior, I had told Brant that I knew that there was a little boy and I was so adamant. And sitting at my nephew's game, it just all came back to me. And like, it was just the most like surreal moment. And so he said, I would not go on the trip, because with these situations, like, you know, I would hate for you to not have any service and then you miss, you know, being able to go up to the hospital. And we're like, no, totally understand.
Because he did tell us that he was early, yeah, and he was going to be in the NICU for a while.
That was all he knew. And there was no,
he knew that he was healthy. No drugs. He was just early. So the social worker, like, there wasn't any rush, right? But he told us not to go on the trip. And Michaela called me. And you want to tell him what you said? I answered, and the first thing she said was, you're going to have a son. And again, I was like, hold on, babe. Like, this, we don't know that yet. And so she told me everything that Jeremy said. And when she told me that he told us not to go on the trip, that was when, for me, it got real, because he wouldn't do that unless he thought there was a really good chance that this was going to be happening. And he had indicated that he doesn't get these phone calls ever from the hospital. And he gave you the social worker's number, mm-hmm, told us that she would be contacting us on a Monday. And if you followed along our story, for some reason, all of these things happen on the weekend for us. And so we have to go days waiting. And that weekend was a very long weekend. And we would get little details here and there from Jeremy throughout the weekend. He had told us that the social worker will be contacting us on Monday morning, that they have their rounds at the hospital at 10, and that she would be contacting us after that on Monday. And so throughout the weekend, we're kind of texting Jeremy questions. He still doesn't really know anything. He's getting little bits and pieces. One of those was that all he knew was basically that it was, the parents just wanted a completely closed adoption.
It was a very hush-hush thing. And so we were thinking, like, what kind of family is this? Like, are they, like, well-known? Are they celebrities? Like, we're thinking
lots of different things. But still, like, you know, we're going all day Saturday. Michaela didn't get back until late Saturday night. And so I'm processing everything kind of by myself, you know, little communication with her.
We felt terrible because we had to call our friends that, you know, we had been planning this trip for like 6 months, like probably longer than that. Six months to a year we had been planning this trip, and we had to tell them. They totally understood, but we were sad too. Like,
yeah. So we go all day Sunday, nothing. We're trying to, in my head, I was thinking, okay, the social worker has 25 names of people that she's going through, and she's gonna, you know, it's a whole process and stuff, right? This is what I was thinking. And
because you have to realize that Reese's adoption was a completely different experience for us. It was never easy,
and we were still going through it at that time, right? We still hadn't even adopted her officially, and so it was just, this was something that was too good to be true. And in our experience, when it's even close to good news, it's not, doesn't come to fruition in that department anyway. But we, all day Sunday, we go to bed. Obviously, we're praying. We're so grateful. Like, we're just thanking Heavenly Father as much as we can, but also trying to get some peace and comfort from him. And Monday comes, and, you know, we have a couple things that we're doing, trying to stay busy. We go into town, do a couple things. 10 o'clock hits, 11 o'clock hits, We don't hear anything.
And he had told us it was going to be like in the morning. So we were
he said she was going to reach out. And I think you texted Jeremy at around 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
And I don't remember what you said, but he didn't really get back. And I mean, he's an attorney. It's like, what else does he have to do other than help us out? Well, but
I texted the social worker
at about 11.
Yeah. And I had texted her a picture of our family, like our last family pictures of Brent and I with Reese. And because I knew that, like I had said in Reese's story, I knew kind of how all of that worked. And so if I had like put a picture to her, because Brent was so worried that, you know, it wasn't going to be us, because he, in his head, like he said, he thought that there was going to be so many other families that she was, you know, like talking to. And so I just thought, okay, I'm just going to put a picture out there so that she can see that,
so that
like,
she picks us.
You know, yeah, so she picks us. This is so cute.
Yeah, so she sent that text at like 11, and I was a nervous wreck pacing back and forth. I could not sit still. I had to replace some of our flooring upstairs because it was all wore down from me moving all over.
Oh my God.
Just kidding. But 2 o'clock hits, and we didn't really sleep this weekend. I told Michaela, I was like, I'm just going to go lay down for a little bit. And I'm not joking. The second I like get to that point where I'm asleep, Michaela goes, babe, she texted me. And I, yeah, I sit up real quick. And I was like, what'd she say? Tell them what she said.
She texts him and she says, he is going, this is the first text, you guys, that we get. She says, congratulations.
Congratulations, mom and dad.
And dad, he is going to be a yummy addition to your family. And I'm like, wait, what? Like, she's calling us mom and dad. Like, babe, she's saying he's going to be a yummy addition to our family. Like, what does this mean? Like,
first of all, I was like, who says that? Yummy. But then, yeah, it was like, wait, so we're like trying to go back and forth. We're trying to, wait, what does this mean exactly?
Yeah.
And so she texts her back. I'm not joking. This lady, we love her to death. She's an angel. She's
definitely an angel in this story.
But she would go an hour between text messages. And yeah. I don't know if she was trying to play games or what, but no, she was not my favorite lady at that time.
Yeah, that was like the first and like the last text for like an hour. And then we get, you know, another text like an hour later. And she said, you know, we're trying to figure out, you know, when you guys can come and visit him. He is preemie. That was when she started to kind of give us a little information. She said that the biological parents did not want any of their names on any of the records, so that they had to go through each department at the hospital and take out every piece of evidence, in all the paperwork. And so it was a process. She said, hopefully you guys will be able to come and see him. I think she said like the next day.
Yeah. This was Monday, kind of late afternoon.
Yeah.
And she said, we're hoping by tomorrow afternoon, you'll be able to come down and visit him.
He weighed at birth 4 pounds, 2 ounces. So he's in the NICU. He's a preemie.
I think she did tell us at that time that he was half Mexican.
I don't think at that time.
I'm never wrong. But yeah, we found out that he was half Mexican. I'm half Mexican. Reese is half Mexican. And it's not that that really matters, but those are just little things that we felt like along the way that Heavenly Father was like, I know you guys so well, and this will mean so much to you. And it does. They forever, Reese looked like she belonged to us. Anyway, she's left-handed. She has blue eyes like her mommy. Michaela's beautiful blue eyes, and she's a lefty. That's why I'm right and she's wrong all the time. But
that is one thing that I really quickly, I did leave out of Reese's story, is that her biological mom told us the night that we met her that she prayed for a blue-eyed, fair-skinned child because all of her kids were dark-skinned, brown-eyed, but she'd always wanted a blue-eyed, fair-skinned child. And when Reese came out, like, she was exactly that. And she said, from then, I knew that she belonged to someone else. And she said that when she was in the womb, she always told her that she was going to be tough, and but she was going to be happy. And that is exactly what Reese. So just another little tender mercy from Heavenly Father, just showing how much he loves us and knows us and what we need. So he was no different.
So Monday goes where we get a text from Jeremy too. And he told us that this might have to happen sight unseen. And we're thinking,
sign paperwork without seeing.
And so we're like, okay, there's something going on here. That's when we were thinking there was like some prominent politician that accidentally got we're thinking just dumb things like that. But
it's like, this is not a house. Like, I'm not going to sign over, like, you know, without seeing this child. Like, what is going on?
Yeah, what if he's not cute?
Oh my God.
Just kidding.
So anyways,
Tuesday comes, we don't hear anything. Until the afternoon again. And she says, I'm really sorry. This is taking a little longer than we thought, but tomorrow for sure. Come down to the hospital at 10 o'clock and you'll be able to meet your son. And again, we hadn't slept for like 5 days just because this is like crazy fun. And excitement. And at this time, Reese is three and a half. And we're telling her that she's going to be a sister. And usually children have 9 months to prep for that, right? And so that was kind of something that we were a little nervous about. She's going to go from being an only child to having a baby brother in a matter of days. And so we did the very best we could to try to prep her, and not knowing exactly how she was going to take it. She was so excited for her baby brother.
She wanted to go and see him so bad.
All the time. And anyway, I'm kind of getting ahead. But Wednesday morning comes. We are driving down to go see our baby boy. And we got in the car. We said a prayer. We were crying, going over. And we park, and the nerves, I mean, this is like, we're about to meet our hero, you know, like, I just can't even explain those emotions or those feelings. We get to the hospital, we park.
We've never seen him before.
No pictures, no nothing.
Nothing really about him other than he was a boy and he was preemie.
And he was yummy. Yeah. So we walk into the entryway in the hospital, and there's a greeter right when you first go in, and she's there asking people where they're going and kind of pointing them in the right direction. And we were told just to walk in and say that we're going to room 27. N27 or something. That's the NICU. So that's all we knew. We just walked in, and that's what we told her. And she goes, oh, it's you guys. And we're like, yeah. But it was that greeting, that initial greeting, it was insane. So different from how we were treated before with Reese. And
she said, we've been waiting for you.
She said, I've been waiting for you. And then she says, I was adopted. And so she says, you'll go right over in there, check in, and they'll give you your name tag and stuff. So we go up to the next area, the security area, and we tell them the same thing. And again, she's like, I'm so excited. I'm going to walk you guys up there. And
we're like looking at each other, like, we feel like we're like walking on the red carpet.
Like just royalty. I mean, this is the way we should have been treated our whole lives, but so we go in and we're both just like looking at each other, like pinching, is this real life, you know? And she walks us up to the floor and she says, okay, you'll go over to those doors over there and ring the door and they'll buzz you in. So we ring the door and a nurse comes and she asks us who we were and what we were doing. And we told her and she brought us in.
She was super excited too. And
yeah.
She says, man, they didn't tell us that you were models. So we're laughing at that. And then she took us back.
Yeah, we had to wash up and stuff.
Oh, we scrubbed our hands for it seemed like for an hour.
And we go back and we walk in and we see this perfect, beautiful little baby boy. He's in the incubator, you know, hooked up and stuff. And you could just tell that he was a Wyatt. Like, even as a preemie, being so small, you could tell that he was just ours. And
all the little cords wrapped up, you know, around him, and there's cords everywhere. They couldn't really, I mean, we couldn't see like a ton of like his face, but like you could see his little cheeks and they were so sweet. And you know, but I think just that angelic feeling.
Yeah, it just felt right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the nurses were giving us instruction and telling us about him and that he's doing really well. He was healthy and just tiny. And here we are in the NICU. There was times that I felt almost guilty because for us, it was such a joyous, perfect, like we were so excited to be there. And these other families, the NICU's not a very fun place to be most of the time, right? Usually when babies have to go into the NICU, there's something wrong. And
there's so many alarms going off and at certain times and panic and running around, and you'd see nurses and doctors, like, you know.
Yeah, but these parents aren't excited to be in the NICU, right? And here we were so happy and glowing and just, it was a weird experience as far as that goes. We got a lot of information that day. We were able to meet the social worker. She told us a lot of stuff that validated Michaela's feelings earlier. The birth mom was kind of in denial that she was pregnant. She had just had a baby less than a year earlier, a little girl.
It wasn't the social worker that told us that. I just wanted to make sure, because she would not be able to tell us this information. She wasn't able to. The reason why we know this is because an angel nurse had overheard me talking to the social worker, like really just kind of scared about, you know, what this family was like, you know. And in the back of your mind, like I had only dealt with Reese's biological parents and knowing that, you know, there was addiction. And so I just didn't know anything about the biological family. And so in the back of your mind, you're like, okay, are we safe? Like, is Reese going to be safe? Like, is this family going to eventually try and find this child? Like, you know, it was just a safety matter. I just kind of was a little scared, you know, and I was talking openly to the social worker. And later on, a nurse had told me, hey, I just want you to know, just so that it can give you a peace of mind, because this is going to be the rest of your life. And I feel like I would not be able to live with myself if I didn't tell you this, but the family, the biological parents, they were in their younger 20s and they had just had a child 11 months older than Teague. And they just could not afford to have another child. And the biological mom was in denial. She didn't know that she was pregnant. And she was in her third trimester when she found out. So she never bonded with Tegan. She never, you know, she wasn't even taking any prenatals, nothing. And so she wanted to ease my mind. They seem like a, you know, cute couple.
They have to be cute.
Totally fine. Yeah.
Cause Teague looks just like me.
Whatever. I'm going to take that one person that told me that Teague looked just like me. They were okay. But yeah, Teague is like spinning image of Brent when he was little. We'll maybe post
that. But one tender mercy was that our social worker did tell us that the birth mom told her that once she realized that she was actually pregnant, that she felt like this baby was somebody else's. And those, if you think about the timeline, that's right when Michaela was having the same feelings that I feel like there's a boy out there.
I thought about that.
And so to hear that, it was Heavenly Father orchestrated this incredible plan for us. And again, stuff like this for people in our situation, we have been blessed miraculously with these two angel children, but it's at the expense of somebody else also. And that, those feelings, they're hard sometimes, but at the same time, knowing that, it makes me want to be the very best dad that I can possibly be for them. Because I owe it to them, my kids, but I also owe it to their birth parents who selfishly gave them to us, knowing that or expecting us to be the best we could for them, to step in for them because they couldn't be what the kids deserved.
I think that was one of the hardest things for me, is like thinking about what this mother was going through while I was getting to hold Teague, you know, chest to chest, and she didn't get to have that moment. And even though like this is what she felt was in her heart, what was right, you know, here I'm getting to do these things, and I just worried so much about her feelings. And another really cool, really quick story that Brent and I didn't share yet is that the social worker ended up telling us that she got the call on Friday. It was a Friday, and at 4 o'clock she got the call, and she was super excited to go home that night because she was going to have this date night.
Well, it was 4 o'clock for you. It was like 2 o'clock here.
Okay, yeah. And she was going to go on a date night with her husband, and she said that she thought for a second that she would just wait to start finding a family
until Monday.
And she decided, she had this prompting that, you know, she needed to just, you know, call, and she would just call around, and hopefully by, you know, Monday, maybe she would have a call back. And so she was almost ready to clock out and go on this date with her husband, and she decided to call some attorney's offices.
Attorneys that she usually
calls
and has a relationship with.
Yeah. And she calls the first attorney. That attorney was gone on vacation. The second attorney didn't answer. The third, fourth, and fifth didn't answer. And it was the sixth that it was Jeremy Bishop's office, and the secretary answered.
And she told us, she's like, I've never met Jeremy. I never talked to him. She says, I was just looking up attorneys, and
he was the sixth one. And so like that in itself is such a huge testament that Like,
because if she would have waited till Monday, we would have been out of cell phone service in the mountains. If we wouldn't have moved to this house, neighbors with Kim, two doors down, if the garage wasn't open, and it wasn't open, but it was, there's so many things, so many different things that Heavenly Father used, so many different people that Heavenly Father used, so many different angels in our story to give us what we don't deserve, to be blessed the way that we have been blessed. The gratitude that I have for Heavenly Father just constantly sticking his hand out and guiding, and I don't know what I did to be so blessed, but I'm so thankful. I will be thankful to my Father in Heaven every day. And seeing, I've always had faith. I've always known that He was there. Right. But now, after all of this, seeing the magic that He's been able to work, I'm as close to 100% positive that I have a loving Heavenly Father who loves me and wants me to be happy and wants to bless me. I know that without a doubt. And we spoke earlier about there were times in our lives where we asked Him, "Where are you?" But now, looking back, He was always there, always. And I will never doubt that again. I will always know that He's there, no matter what we go through. And through all of this, we got Teague's adoption day. Literally, he was like 8 days old. We had, like, the third day we had met him, we had his adoption day set, October 6th. Jeremy was able to get on the state, get them going, and Andrea also.
Yeah, I want to shout out to Andrea, our angel throughout this whole process with Reese. She's the first one that I contacted on. She was a family friend, and I contacted her on what we could do to, you know, go through the whole process with Reese from start to finish, and then I contacted her again, letting her know about Teague's situation, and she's the one who really honestly put the effort into trying to push, because she was like a manager of, you know, I don't even know, like her, sorry.
She didn't really have a ton to do with our specific case, but at this moment, she was able to get with the right people and kind of push things through, and Jeremy was able to get on them, and miraculously, we found out just a couple weeks before that we were going to be able to adopt them both on the same day. And we had so much family here, and we adopted them on October 6th. In our church, in our religion, we believe that families are forever, and we were able to take them to the temple and be sealed to our kids and have an eternal family. And we were able to do that the next day on Saturday, and the next day, Sunday, I was able to bless them in church. And months before that, Michaela leaned over to me and she was having a hard time in church. There was a baby blessing and she was crying throughout the whole thing. And she said, I don't know if you're ever going to be able to bless one of our kids. And a few months later, I was able to give them a blessing.
The reason I thought that is because Reese, like, usually you bless
babies.
And Reese had already...
we didn't know for sure that...
Well, we weren't allowed to do any of that kind of stuff because she wasn't...
Right, until she was adopted. But I want you all to know we have a story where we're able to talk about God's hand in our lives and being able to see his hand, see him work. And I promise you, he does the same for you. He can and he will work miracles in your life. He can and he will bless you with angels, both seen and unseen. There will be times throughout this podcast that I will be able to share more of experiences that I've had where I have felt protection from unseen angels. And that's not just me. I'm not the only person that has had those experiences. I promise you that if you are able to be more aware of your surroundings and of what's going on, and you'll be able to see Heavenly Father work in your life. I promise you that. And that's my truth for the day. That's something I know to be true. I know that we are protected. And that doesn't mean that there's still bad things that happen to good people, right? But I know that Heavenly Father is there for me and for you. And I'll leave it with that. Babe, what's something you know to be true?
Something that I know to be true is that you will find what you are focused on. And I think that for so long, you know, I was focused on, you know, like, why me? Like, why do I have to go through this? Like, I'm doing everything that I can think of to be righteous and, you know, but man, like, just seeing all of this unfold, like, it's just, I promise you, like Brent has said, like, there's that saying that, you know, is so special to me now. And it's the saying of, you know, in our waiting, God was working. And like, I promise you, there are so many angels among us. And if we like focus on finding them, we will find them. And if we focus on the positives, like we will find those positives, you know, but we can also focus on the negatives and that's what we're going to see. But
don't do that.
Don't do that. Like, just trust in him, like have faith in him. And pray when you're mad, like yell if you need to. He is there, I promise you. It might not come when you want it, but he has a plan. And just focus on the positive and find those angels in your life because they are there 100%.
They are there. That does it for our story. You'll hear more little stories here and there throughout. But I'm telling you guys, we have some incredible stories coming up that I've just wanted our 3 episodes to get over so that we can start getting to some of these other stories, incredible stories. And for any of you listening, if you have something that you're ready and willing to share of angels in your lives, please reach out to us. The world needs to hear it. Even though we only have like 200 or so followers right now, but hopefully it'll get a little bit more.
We could use your support and liking and sharing and subscribing. Share it to all of your friends. There's a bigger purpose here.
Yep. And we appreciate the support. Mm-hmm. We do love you. Even if we don't know you, I love you. And I appreciate you listening. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for joining us on Angels Among Us. You can find us on YouTube and wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow along for more stories of everyday miracles and reminders that angels are among us. If you have a story to share, please email or DM us with a brief summary. We'd love to hear from you. And remember, when we are waiting, God is working.